A values-based life starts here.
Welcome to In Conversation with Heartlines, a show where we try and help you do what's right so that you can fix the things that are wrong. As we bring you an all-men's roundtable today, I'm Brett Fish Anderson, Western Cape rep for Heartlines, improv comedy actor and competitive board game player in my spare time, and we will be discussing all things mental health and finance. Our guest panel today consists of Tsepo Setole and Desmond Chauke, who form part of the Heartlines Community Mobilization Team, and they are joining us to speak about the link between mental health and money. Welcome, Tsepo and Desmond.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you very much, Brett, for the intro. You sound like a man of many hats.
That is true, and occasionally some beanies as well. Perhaps you guys can start by just letting me know, or letting us know who you are and giving a little bit of your background.
Thank you very much, Brett. My name is Desmond from Alexander Township. That's where I'm born and bred. I work for Heartlines currently, and my role is just being a community mobilizer, getting our communities to talk about our social ills and providing resources basically to assist in terms of the communication and the facilitation in that space.
Thank you, Desmond. And Tsepo, welcome.
Sure, thank you, Brent. Thank you so much. So the name is Tsepo Setole. As I've said, unfortunately, I was not consulted when I was given that name, so I'm moving back it. I work for Heartlines as a facilitator, but also I am a runner. I love coffee, but also beyond that, I love serving and working with people.
Excellent. Well, it's nice to get to know you a little bit as we roll through this conversation. What excites me about this conversation is we are combining two things that rarely get spoken about, the one being money and the one being mental health. And we're going to dive right into those. But let me just say up front that it's important to note that while our guests are not professional mental health or medical practitioners, they will both be speaking from their own personal journeys, as well as their experience of working face to face with communities and the stories they've encountered regarding the impact of money on one's mental health. And so if you are listening today, please consult with a counselor or a therapist or medical professional if you have specific concerns about your mental health, or maybe something is triggered by what we speak about today. I think the correlation between money and mental health has always been there, but as I said, like, it's things we tend to not speak about, but we can draw from many examples that show us the correlation between the two. And especially as we are heading up to Christmas, I think the festive season for many breadwinners signifies a period that comes with heightened levels of anxiety and stress because of this idea, who wants to be the Grinch and steal the Christmas joy away from our families? Other families are buying this or doing that. And so in today's podcast, we hope to answer why we often invalidate our feelings about what we can realistically afford, and also answer one of the most important questions, which is how your mental health impacts your relationship with money. Let's jump into the first question, and perhaps drawing from your own life experiences, share with us how your mental health has affected the way that you use money. Desmond?
I think for me, the biggest revelation has been understanding the why of how I use my money. For the longest time, I thought I was one person that was very irresponsible in terms of how I handled my money. And that came to me because I did not understand the mental implications of it. What do I mean by that? As someone who has grown up thinking that I should have a better handle of my money, and even though I knew that and created plans around it, but I'd find myself having a big goal, save towards it, and then this new sneaker comes out and I find myself going for it, and I'd regret it for a long time because I was not meant to buy it. But then again, I recently been diagnosed with ADHD, and it has all come back together to say, you know what, there's a reason behind the spending, and it manifests in small things. Things where you say, I want to save money and do this thing, and the next thing you find yourself spending spontaneously and enjoying it in the moment, but the long-term consequences then reveal themselves later on. So that is how I found out. With that revelation, it also changed how I look at things, because I asked myself, how many people go, especially in the township, undiagnosed with a number of mental illness that affects how they spend, how they save, how they view money. And on the outside, we see people who are reckless or spending money in a particular way, but we don't know the underlying things that go with it. And I think juggling that mental challenge at the same time, because I know that my immediate desires, I should have a control over them. But at the same time, there's that impulse and the need to want to spend money in a spontaneous and sometimes reckless way. But at the same time, I feel like it's something that has helped me with the diagnostic to know that I need to have systems in place in order for me to be able to handle how I use money. And that has changed how I see my finances a little bit deeper, even though I still have struggles, though it has helped me a little bit to really know the why of why I spend my money the way I do.
Thanks, Desmond. There's a lot there, and there's certainly stuff that I related to, that idea of the impulse spending. And I think of shops that have the sweet aisle placed as you're heading towards the cashier, and you see all these things that you didn't want or didn't need, and suddenly they're right in front of your eyes, and they take you away from the goal. As you mentioned, you're saving towards a goal, and then something flashy comes up, and there's that thing you spend on. And then that whole thing of instant gratification, enjoying this for the moment, but in the long term, you might be sacrificing a responsibility or something else that you're working towards. Do you speak about people kind of judging what they see on the outward? Like we say, oh, that person is spending so recklessly or whatever, without taking time to ask what might be happening internally. And I think that's kind of the importance of this conversation, as you've spoken a little bit about your ADHD. Tsepo, as we look at the same question, your experiences, do you have a different story or do you have some overlaps with what Desmond shared?
No, just a recent experience on my end. You know, it said I've spent the better half of this year and the last part of last year preparing for Cape Town Marathon. And during my training, obviously, you plan finances. It's exciting. I'm flying down to Cape Town, da da da. And during the training, I then get an injury that I didn't quote unquote plan for. And that injury then had to make me redirect my finances to certain medical processes. And that for me, you know, whenever you have to say, okay, I need to now, instead of putting money to get a ticket to fly down, and I have to put money aside to go see the physio, to go see, you know, a doctor because of these things. And in that process, mentally, one of the things that I'll just be asking myself is that, what is it that I could have done better for me not to be injured? Because now there's an element of regret that I should be doing what I love doing and I enjoy doing. And in me preparing for that, I then get to have an experience that's going to deal with me financially, which I didn't anticipate. So the element of mental health for me within this context may not be, oh, I'm diagnosed or something. You know, the challenge would be, I just sit down alone sometimes while I'm at my place or at home and just ask that, how could have things turned out for me if I was not injured? But also now having to, being a young Black person, I sometimes get money, and the money that I get does not only have to accommodate me. So to a certain extent, even though I have an X amount that I may need to commit to a regular visit to the physio, at the same time, I need to have money that I can put aside to assist family and friends when needed. At the same time, I need to see if I'm able to take care of myself. So the mental health then gets to that point that in my thinking, when I'm in this pain physically, how am I able to distribute myself financially and emotionally to other parts of my life and also to other people that I do life? And having to balance that, I think, could be a bit of a challenge, because you don't want to disappoint people, unfortunately.
Thank you, Tsepo. And I think it's the value of a panel is that we have different kind of experiences, different stories. And so somebody listening might relate more to your story and somebody else might hear something Desmond said and that kind of connects or triggers. And firstly, sorry that you didn't make it to Cape Town. I think that's what I'm sorry for. As a non-runner, I almost feel like you got saved from having to do this terrible thing. I come from a family of runners and I know how much they love it. So missing out on a race you've been planning for is really disappointing. And even kind of the kind of mental health things that go around that, it's a lot wider than just the money side. If that's kind of what we're looking at now, and we'll go into kind of what can we do. But the one thing that really stood out from what you said was this idea of the flexibility of changing plans. You're heading in one direction and then sometimes there's an unplanned interruption. In your case, injury, it could be a car accident, natural disaster, whatever, but something kind of sends you in another way. And then it's like, okay, what is the plan now when you haven't planned for this? And then you brought up something that for me as a white person is not really a consideration, especially not in the same way, which is this idea of what I guess you would call black tax, that there's a responsibility to family. Your money is not just accommodating you, but there's a wider group of people that are around you that you feel responsible for. And I think it's important for us to be able to hear the stories of others and know that there are different pressures and things that play on that. And I think the last thing I want to say in terms of Sempo shared was that whole thing of not being diagnosed. Like, it's not a specific, Desmond has some letters he can point to, this diagnosis that helps give some understanding. But it doesn't mean if you haven't had a diagnosis that your mental health is 100%. We all are kind of on a spectrum where different things affect us. And as we start to talk about it, as we start to invite others in, as we start to listen, we can realize that these things do influence us and it's good to work on them. And I think when we talk about money, a lot of us have this idea that money can be stressful. Both of you mentioned some different ideas about that, and that can influence how we spend it. And so the next question I want to look at, especially as we head to the end of the year where a lot of people tend to put themselves in debt, how do we move from, say, survival mode, just getting through, to a more stable mindset when it comes to your money? How do we kind of take some of the pressure off the decisions that we might have to make and the future that we have ahead of us?
Yeah, I think I'll jump in there. So one of the things that we used to communicate while we were still doing the consumer financial education program was the importance of planning. And, you know, when people speak about financial planning, the first thing that comes to mind is that I need to have a lot of money, huge sum of money. And we often say, you know, if you don't know what you're going to do with your 20 rands, that's a problem. If you have 20 rands in your pocket and you don't know what to do with it, it's a big, big problem. Because if you can manage or plan for 20 rands, it's going to be difficult for you to even plan for 20 million. No. So within this context, I always say to people during our sessions that we know that Christmas is coming, like we know. And the difficulty is that unfortunately, a huge bulk of South Africans, we are living from paycheck to paycheck. We are surviving, for lack of a better word. But the best thing that could work for us, especially when it comes to festive seasons, is to say, how do we plan for that as a family? How do we invest time and resources in planning? We know that Christmas is coming in December and there are other activities related to that. How do we spread ourselves during the course of the year to plan how we anticipate seeing our December? And lastly, our mismanagement of finances in the festive season. We often see the impact and the result in the first 3 months of the year, where people don't have money to go to work on January, where people don't have enough money to pay for certain things in the first half of the year or in the first 3 months of the year. And I'm saying, if possible and you have the means, rather than waiting for December to happen, plan for your first year when you have some time.
Excellent. Thank you. Desmond, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with Tepo. As someone who has grown up in a township, especially in Alex, financial survival is a norm for us. Everyone is trying to survive from month to month, paycheck to paycheck. Moving from survival to stability for me did not happen overnight. It was a long and gruesome experience that I had to go through. It required a little bit of unlearning of certain habits. I think one of the habits that I adopted, and this was because of the learning in my community, was spending before you even start saving. You know, and now the mental shift is that I save before I start spending. That has helped me a lot because it means that I am in control and that my spending habits have now taken a back seat. And number two, which was more important, was having a plan for my money. One of the biggest lessons I've learned, and powerful lesson, that small wins are wins at the end of the day. When I save 50 rands a week, I've saved money. And I should be grateful for that, because how I've grown up is that you don't think about tomorrow, you only think about now. And I think for me, what I like the most is that moving from survival to stability is about turning those small wins, making them consistent. I had to make them consistent, and now they form part of habits that I live by. So that has helped me a lot, but also just understanding the context where I come from. There's a lot of societal pressure to just provide, especially for our extended family members. For instance, I know that during this time, I've already had a conversation with my sister to say, now that we're moving towards December, the kids need to have clothes. I do not want to find myself having to go in debt to buy those clothes. Can we do lay-bys? Go to the shops, look for the clothes that you want, and we put a 3-month plan to pay for those clothes. And with that in place, I know that this is how much I need to spend for them. So that lessens the pressure for me to actually just want to, December now, I want to spend for everything. But that is a survival mentality that all of us had or still have, especially thinking in the context of just being a Black men in a township. But to move from stability, it takes a shift in the mindset and takes those small actions that one has to take to say, I want to build financial security for myself. What does it look like? And if there are things that do not align with it, then it means I need to put boundaries in place. Because without those boundaries, I'm naturally a people pleaser, Brett. And being a people pleaser means that every request that comes from my family member, instead of saying no, I will go deep into my pockets and into my savings just to please them. But at the same time, their goals that I've set for myself means they have to take a back seat. And now the mentality has changed to say, this is the budget, let me include you in the budget, and if the money is not enough to help us get through December, then it means we have to make changes and sacrifices, but we make them together. And we are disappointed together, but we know the truth is that the money is not there, or the money has been used, and we just have to find creative ways to enjoy the festive season, even if it means we have to burn, I don't know if you know, steel wool, instead of buying crickets, we'll have to burn steel wool just to get by and enjoy like everyone else. But we know that the kids have clothes for Christmas, they have shoes, their education is taken care of, there's money to pay off all these other things. So that has been useful for me.
There's a lot of really helpful stuff in there. Thank you so much. I really like that part at the end where you spoke about kind of understanding context and then having a plan, but then also linked to that is putting boundaries in place. But I love the community aspect where you said, if you have a family member that you know is going to have a need, let me include you in the budget and then let us do changes and sacrifices together. This money thing and mental health thing, actually both of them, I think they work so much better in community when we are working together. And rather let us figure out a plan that allows us to have maybe less of the Christmas we thought of in one sense, but in a way that means the first 3 months of next year are not going to be a huge burden on us. And you spoke about habits as well. So spending before saving becomes saving before I spend. And then it lets you know what you have the capacity for. It lets you know what is there. And I imagine that that reduces some of the anxiety. I think of being a car owner, that idea that if you don't save, I don't have months and months and months of money. So it's that thing of, if I'm not putting a little aside every month, then suddenly the car needs a service and there's a big pile of money that needs to go out, and it's like, oh, where does this come from? And so Seb also spoke about this idea of planning ahead, and especially to what you know is coming. There's some things that surprise us, but Christmas is something we know is on the way.
Birthdays, we should not be surprised by school. Christmas.
Yeah, we've been through it enough times. So thank you. There's lots of things that hopefully are just giving our listeners something to think about and connect to our own things, like even that mindset of that 20 rand. If I can handle that 20 rand well, then maybe one day I'll be able to handle the 20 million well. And if I'm useless with 20 rand, then I'm not going to be great with large amounts of money.
That's the truth.
We've got a number of resources available on the Heartlines website. All of it's free. So if you haven't taken a look, please go check out heartlines.org.za. And on the values and money kind of part of that website particularly. And one of those is the values and money course, which you gentlemen both know really well. And that really helps us examine our attitudes and behavior and values around different aspects of money. And let me read out the 5 values. And I'm going to ask each of you to choose one of the money values. And hopefully you're going to choose different ones to give us different perspective. And then tell us how they've helped improve your financial situation. So we have honesty in earning, responsibility in spending, wisdom in borrowing, self-control in saving, and generosity in giving. Sepo, do you want to go first with this?
For me, it will have to be self-control in saving. It played a huge role in my life, especially in having to acquire certain things that I wanted to acquire. You know, I remember also just being able to do a particular course, saved up money for that and did that course, and also with some family responsibilities. So saving had played a huge role. My current favorite, and the nice thing about these values is that they can move depending on the season that you are in life. But one of the values, and I know you said one, but you know, the one that's making sense to me now because of where I am in life is wisdom in borrowing. You know, having to understand how credit works, why credit is important, especially when it comes to the journey of asset accumulation. But when it comes to planning, self-control in saving, it's not easy, but it's doable.
Excellent. Thank you. And Desmond?
I'll have to go with responsibility in spending with a little bit of wisdom in borrowing. And I'll tell you how the two go together. With responsibility in spending, for me, it's about asking the most important question that I'm still struggling to do today. And the question is, do I need this or I just want it? And the rule of thumb for me, I think having worked on this project for a little while, is that if something is really a need and I need this thing, I take at least 24 hours to think about it. And if the need for it doesn't excite me after 24 hours, then it's no longer a need. It was just something I wanted. And that has helped me. As silly as that sounds, it has helped me just to think differently about what I spend my money on. Mm. There are certain things that I'll be excited about when I see for the first time. And I'm like, okay, you know your 24-hour rule. Try and apply it. And I'll be in the shop at the same time. Those poor ladies will be looking at me and thinking, okay, there's a madman in this house. But it's one of those things. I'd go back home, think about it, because I'm just one of those people that is obsessed, go to the internet, check if there's any better offers of the same thing. And when I find myself doing all those things, I just know that it's not a need, it's just a want, and I can move on without doing anything about it. But the most important one that is close to my heart currently is just wisdom in borrowing. You know, as someone who has never had any education when it comes to credit, I found myself struggling to build my credit. And I only knew about credit when I wanted to buy myself a cell phone. The space that we're in, you find yourself wanting to upgrade your phone, yeah, upgrade how you look so that you look presentable. So I go to the shop and I give them all my credentials, and I'm sure I'm going to get this because, I mean, the paycheck says I can. And they look at me and they say, brother, your credit score is way too low. I'm like, what is that? They say, it's your ability to get this certain goods, but it's a number. You need to reach a certain number. And when I checked, it was terrible. I had a negative score and I wanted to find out why. And they said, have you taken any loans or anything that has to do with taking things before you pay for them? And I remembered that I once did that. And that's where the journey began, to want to understand this better. And yeah, my journey with understanding wisdom in borrowing started. And I understood that debt isn't just a loan, but it's a future commitment. What am I committing myself to, and will there be consequences for it? And I feel like borrowing becomes a quick solution, especially when we enter your festive season where you just want to take a loan so that we keep up with the latest trends, look good, and maintain a certain appearance because we don't have the money. But what's the long-term consequences of that? And adopting this value and keeping it close to my heart and sharing it with my family has helped me at least to have a bit of financial control, but also to be able to have future stability. I'm working on building my credit score and there are certain things that it would help me have access to. And I would have never thought of that until I go to that shop and I was like, my cell phone, I can afford it. And I said, no, you can't. If you want to get the cell phone, it's going to cost you. And yeah, that's how I woke up. So sure, wisdom in borrowing is something that I'm really working towards and trying to channel as one of my values, and it has really assisted me. And I think a lot of people would benefit from understanding what it means. Wisdom simply means that you need to read what is written and understand that whatever that you sign or get yourself into has long-term consequences towards how it affects your future as well.
Sure. Desmond, so much wisdom in there. And I love that take 24 hours to think about it, because I know that would benefit me. When you, in the moment, you see the thing, it's easy to buy it. But often yes. You just need to step away from it and realize, yeah, I didn't need that thing. But in the moment, it is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think given what you've said, the next question I had was about kind of leading up to Christmas and family expectations. But I feel like you've both spoken a little bit into that. So I'm going to throw you guys a little bit of a curveball with a question, and let's see how we go with it. So I know you haven't had time to think about this particular one, but something that I found out about the other day, you mentioned lay-bys. Like, I'd heard about it my whole life, but I never really understood what it was. And it's this idea that you pay up front for a couple of months and then you get something. And that for me makes so much more sense than a credit card, which is the opposite. You spend it and then you kind of spend all your time paying it off and paying for kind of the interest and all of that. And then the question that I have, and I'll give an example just to give you guys a little bit of time to think about it, but is this whole thing, whether it comes to mental health, but particularly where money is connected, until I've heard about lay-by, I don't know what it is. You spoke about credit score, Desmond. Until you heard about that, you didn't know what it was. It's not something that kind of we're learning at school, that we've got this information that families are talking about. So how would each of you suggest, how do we find spaces to have these crucial conversations, both about money and about mental health? And maybe there's a cultural piece in terms of how is it to speak about these things in your kind of cultural and family and spaces that is going to improve our mental health? Like, how can we teach people new things just by having the conversations where there's knowledge that we have, but maybe the person that lives next door doesn't know about credit score, or until your child hears about lay-by or whatever it is. And so one example that I have from my life while you guys are thinking about that is the way that I use my credit card, which is basically as a debit card. So I put money onto my credit card and then I never spend into the credit limit of it, which means that I get all the benefits of the credit card, but I'm not paying off the interest. And so somebody taught me that trick like years ago. It's such a simple thing. It's probably so obvious to so many people, but until think about it, or until you hear about it, you don't know about it. And so does that make sense in terms of like, how do we foster spaces for engagement around two things that are so important, as you've spoken about, you and you've given examples of good ways and bad ways in which they affected with you. How do we encourage people to step into those?
One of the most interesting things that I had to learn, I'm fiercely independent in the way I do things. And that on its own, it's a mental challenge, because it means there's nobody that I trust except myself. And you'd want to find out what's the deeper underlying cause. And obviously there is, but at the same time, I think one of the most powerful coping mechanisms that I've had to relearn, instead of just being this independent thinker, is to share my ideas, especially with my family, immediate family especially, and also my friends, people that I trust the most. And that has helped me to deal with the financial stress when I talk about it, because when I think about it and ruminate on it, it does create a level of anxiety in me, because whenever I think about it, I'm not objective in how I think about it, number one, and number two, I tend to lean more on the negative side of things, and number three, it gets me to a corner where I have to deal with my own financial struggles alone. In our communities, there is a stigma attached to it that says discussing money problems and opening up to people seems a sign of weakness. But the opposite is true, actually. When you find trusted people that you can talk to about this thing, it's not a sign of weakness. In fact, it's a strategy for me for strength, because you then get a different opinion that you would have never gotten from yourself, because where you are in that space, you have not opened yourself up for new information. And opening up does help. And I think for many of us, especially as men, we need to break the cycle of silence and find spaces where we are comfortable to talk, even if it means find a professional. If you trust nobody, find someone to talk to, because if you don't talk about it, then it's going to eat you up. Then you become resentful, find yourself using the very same money to try to solve your mental blocks at times, and it just creates a spiral and it goes on and on. And some of us find terrible coping mechanisms to try and deal with a simple thing that could have not been so difficult if we just open up to someone. And I think for me, that's what has assisted me throughout this year, especially when I found one or two people to share things with, and they are my sounding board. I don't always feel comfortable, but I've pushed myself because I know there's an avenue for help and I don't feel alone anymore.
Oh, Desmond. I love that. It's seen as a sign of weakness, but actually the opposite is true. It's a strategy for strength.
Exactly.
There are so many bumper stickers coming out of this conversation. I know we must kind of head to the end. Sebo, did you have anything to add on that particular one in terms of inviting other people into the conversation?
Yeah, and not much. You know, there's this concept called social engineering. And what social engineering has done is to say there are certain things or conversations you can only have at a particular space. Mm. And I think one of our responsibilities as individuals is to break that norm, yeah, in a sense that we don't only have to go to school to learn about finances. I need to create the space within home, yeah, and my environments to teach and learn about finances. So our biggest assignment right now is to say, look, this is where I am. How do I use where I am as a learning center for all of us?
Hmm.
And all that is needed, and this is what headlines would say a lot, is just that one person to have the courage and start the conversation, whether be it about finances or be it about mental health. But it just needs me to be intentional with starting the conversation, whether I'm on my way to work in a bus or I'm at home with my niece doing the dishes. I can ask them, what do you think about money? What do you think about this concept or this reality called depression? It doesn't have to be in a conference. It doesn't need to be in a perfect setting. We just need to take that responsibility to say, where I am, how do I become an instrument of learning for everyone around me, including myself?
Yo, Tsepo, I think that's a great line to end us off with. Have the courage to start the conversation. You add that to Desmond's, this is not a sign of weakness, it's a strategy for strength. Have the courage to start the conversations. Desmond, Tsepo, I want to thank you both for having this conversation. And we've just, in some ways, just grazed the top of the iceberg. There's so much more. But I think we've realized today that it's so key that we just start having these conversations. It's important for us to realize where mental health and how we value and how we spend our money, how those things are connected, and that if we start dealing with money well, we are actually starting to take care of ourselves when it comes to our mental health. And that wherever we are, we can start in that space. We can look ahead to the things we know that are coming, and we can plan for things that we might not know are coming. That's it for today. Thank you. I hope that you've enjoyed listening, and we hope we've left you inspired as we learn and grow together. And to continue this conversation, to connect with more values and money content, please go check out our website, www.valuesandmoney.org.za, or connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube as @heartlinesza. My guests have been Tsepo Sithole and Desmond Chauke. I am Brett Fish Anderson, and this has been another episode of In Conversation with Heartlines. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. We hope we've left you inspired as we learn and grow together. To continue this conversation and to connect with more values-based content, visit our website at www.heartlines.org.za. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at @heartlinesza.